C1G, number 25A.
We'll take today the third part of the chapter on Genesis, and it is quite an interesting part because it deals with the theories of evolution, those many theories of evolution which are brought forth even today, whereas Mrs. Eddy had to deal at her time with Agassiz and Darwin. Today, naturally, there are many other theories of evolution in discussion. But though there are many different theories of evolution, they all have one common denominator. They have all one common denominator, namely that matter is the seed for life, that matter produces life, that somehow at some point in the development of the earth there was a change over from inorganic matter to organic matter, and that life has its origin in matter and evolved according to the laws of matter. Now, all these theories stand against what the Bible would teach and about what Christian Science teaches. So I only want to bring out, though, these theories that Mrs. Eddy is quoting at her time and therefore is not up to date at what she would quote today. It really doesn't matter very much because the fundamental claim is still the same today as it was yesterday and last century. When we considered the second scriptural note at the beginning of Genesis, we said that what John is saying has really reference to the three parts of the chapter. I just repeat it there. It is quoted, all things were made by him. All things were made by him, and we said this really illustrates the first part of the chapter, that God created all. Then John goes further and says, and without him was not anything made that was made, an indication of the second record of creation, that second record of creation is no creation, that it is from nothingness and goes back to nothingness, that it is just the exact opposite of truth, a suppositional opposite of truth. And now we come to the third part where John goes on and says, and the life was the light of men. Well, very often when they used the light of men, they meant really the creative intelligence of men. So what the third part brings out is life and mind, namely that life is the origin of mind, or the other way around also, that all life originates in mind. So that is the great overall tone, and we have epitomized it, life and mind, as life is its own creator, creator mind. So this is an aspect of evolution which is not shared by natural science. That life is its own creator, therefore that the whole creation goes out from the fact that there is life, that there is being, and that that life is without beginning and without end. So it has no beginning and therefore no theory of evolution. So the whole text flows really always interspersed into the paragraphs and tones, always that overall tone of life and mind, namely as life being the only creator, that life is the origin of all, that life is the only standpoint from which we should go out as the first cause, that life is the cause of all existence, that life is self-existent and eternal. Can you hear now that terrific tone which says, don't think that creation started somewhere. It couldn't start somewhere, because there is no somewhere. There is only being-isness. And so we begin to see that only if we reason from isness that we really can have a true sense of what creation is. Now, we have a long text for 2 hours, and usually I would need for a long text like this perhaps 4 or 6 hours, and we have to do it in 2 hours. And I can easily do that now, because we can flow along the epitomes. Now that you know how epitomes are built up, that they show some kind of a calculus, always a main tone and then the subtones combined with them, it should be easy really to give an interpretation of those many pages, 13 or 14 pages, within such a short time. What did we say, how we approach a subject? What is text interpretation? How do we go get to the core of a subject? We always said we must first take the big lines before we start out with the details. So what we do quickly together is that we read the epitomes that are printed in bold letters. The third part again is built up in 7 subjects along the word order, and we just consider now quickly those 7 big aspects. So in order to bring out the overall tone that life is its own creator, Mrs. Eddy starts out with mind as the creator. Man origins in mind, and the counterfeit of it is that material creation originates in erroneous thought. Very simple. Can you see now? You have a statement and you can think around it very easily, because you know it all has to do with mind, that mind is the creator of everything, that man therefore originates in mind and not in matter. Once she has stated that, she goes on to the 2nd subject of spirit, that man therefore is evolved spiritually, that matter has no creative power. You can see that is just the next step, that we have to see that mind, where all originates, must be of the nature of spirit and not of mentality, but of spirit, and that therefore man evolves spiritually and not materially. Therefore he didn't evolve, the true man didn't evolve according to Darwin's theory from apehood up to man, but his starting point is mind, and he evolves through spirit and in a spiritual way. This naturally leads to the point of soul, namely to the immortality of soul. If man's origin is mind, not matter, and if that mind is spirit, then naturally man must be immortal, because he has no mortal origin. So the 3rd step here, subject, will show that man is forever immortal. He does not have to rise from mortality to immortality. And this is really showing a wonderful sense of soul, that there is no such a thing as rising out of mortality step by step, with a lot of struggle and with a lot of crisis in between, until finally he could arrive at immortality. we have to go out from the fact that man is immortal, therefore ever was, is, and shall be. So you get really the intactness of man, the immortality of man since time immemorial. We have always seen that mind, spirit, soul gives us somehow the building blocks of being, that everything rests on that foundation, that the nature of God is mind, spirit, soul taken together as the principle of the science of being. And so, if she states really those three points and states them in a way that is exactly in opposition to the natural scientists, then naturally she has somehow to justify her statement and say, why on earth am I allowed to make such a statement that is absolutely contrary to the natural scientist? And her only justification that she can bring forth is in the fourth subject of principle, where we have the epitome that Christian Science gives the true interpretation of the divine principle and of the scriptures, and proves its correctness by the good it accomplishes. What she is saying here, therefore, is this. You can see that quite easily. Here are all those theories of evolution which say the origin of man is somehow way back with the apes, or somewhere way back with an egg or with a cell or anything like that. It's a material origin. And they all say that there is a material evolution taking place in an ascending way, the counterfeit of spirit. And they all say that man is mortal, that he had a beginning and will have an end. And Mrs. Eddy comes and says the exact opposite. Well, if a scientist comes like Mrs. Eddy and states the exact opposite as what the other scientists are saying, she naturally has to prove her statement and say, on what ground do you bring forward your hypothesis or your theory or your principle? And so at this point she justifies herself and says, well, Christian Science relies on the scriptures, and the scriptures too say what I say if you interpret the scriptures spiritually, but that is not the only proof I have. I can also prove it through demonstration. That was always her great asset, that she said, I can prove it to you through demonstration. And therefore she says, our proof in it is not that we argue with the natural scientists. Our proof lies in demonstrating and in showing the good our principle accomplishes. Then she goes to the fifth subject and says, all right, what is now my standpoint? My standpoint is that man has ever been. Life is. Life is always at the point of isness, and therefore evolves only spiritually, and life does not evolve organically. So you have the method of life. First of all, the fact that life is, and then combined with it, the method of life, that life evolves spiritually. You have a spiritual evolution and not an organic evolution. But, again, she has to meet another argument, which would say, well, this is a wrong concept, and I never have experienced such a thing. What do you say? I experience mortality. I experience really birth and maturity and decay and death, what you say doesn't seem to be reasonable. So she must come in with the tone of truth and say, well, you see, the way you reason is all right, but it's a wrong reasoning because you have a wrong consciousness. Naturally, with a mortal consciousness, you can't see the true creation. What you need is actually a divine consciousness, a true concept of creation. So at the point of truth, she shows us then that the true concept of creation would redeem man from his wrong concept of creation. Can you see what she does? She takes the whole principle of evolution that she has shown through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, takes it right back to the point of consciousness and says, all depends on consciousness. If you have a mortal consciousness, you can't see this spiritual evolution. If you have a true concept or a true consciousness, you are in agreement with this spiritual evolution. So you better change your consciousness. And in this subject here, we will see how the true concept, or the true consciousness, we could say, of creation, redeems man from a wrong concept of creation or from a wrong consciousness about creation. When we do that, then naturally we find out something, that then our consciousness, our divine consciousness, is in agreement with God, and therefore there is no more anything that is exterior to that unity of God and man. And we have really reached the climax where man and God are coexistent, and there is no other question that comes up. So love here, as the last stone shows, God and man are coexistent. And if we can see that through truth, namely through a right consciousness, then all the questions about material evolution, step-by-step evolution, an ascending way of evolution, a material evolution, an embryonic evolution, all that does no more enter really into the discussion. It's excluded. And we have found at the end of the chapter man's coexistence with God, where we see that man never did fall away from God, was always with God. And if man never fell away from God, the whole question of evolution is obsolete. And then we get it. So actually what we would see in this third part is how to come to the point where we see that that whole question of evolution is a wrong question and is actually obsolete, because man fundamentally has never fallen away from God, therefore never fallen away from his fulfilled state of perfection, and therefore he has never to go back to perfection. And all that is built on consciousness. Yes. This is the third part. Actually, at this point, we could finish and go home, because we would see the whole question. What I wanted to show you in this way is how you could really study that textbook with the help of these epitomes, and these epitomes rightly viewed, first in the big line, and going right through and say, well, how does the seven epitomes unfold, what is the reason from one to the other, then we would have found the answer in seven statements, in seven epitomes. See, that's another point that perhaps just crossed my mind, which is important, which I have not touched yet, is that when you have these epitomes, it is not only necessary to see how an epitome is actually only bringing out, say, a capitalized term by itself, or a capitalized term in relation to another capitalized term or their ideas. So it is that the first step that you can see what does that epitome really mean when we bring it back to, say, mind is mind, mind is spirit, mind is soul, and so on. But the second step that is just as important, if not more important, is actually then to see how these epitomes form a story, a chain of scientific being, how mind then is actually followed by spirit in a divinely logical way, not just stated one next to the other, but how mind needs spirit, how spirit needs soul, and that only then we really have a principle on which to stand, how then that principle demonstrates itself as life, how life leads to truth, how truth leads to love, so that we have an uninterrupted logic that flows from the first to the last statement. Then you get order, you see. So these epitomes by themselves only show the statement of the synonymous term, but the flow from one synonymous term to the other show the order of being, that divine order that comes down from heaven, so that we find something very important, like I have shown here, instead of just going out from the last statement in that third part, namely that man has never fallen away from deity, therefore we never have to deal with a fallen man. That's the end. Love is love, and it's a terrific statement. But if we go out from that without having all the preceding stages which build up step by step to that point, then we take love as love in as a statement, as a sentence, as a belief, as something that we actually do not fully understand. We only begin to understand fully if we flow really through the whole order, through the build-up of the subject, until we arrive at the conclusion. So usually at the end of such a chapter we have the conclusion, whereas at the beginning we have the proposition and then the building stones, the building blocks. Then after the building blocks we begin to see the demonstration of that building block through principle, life, truth, so that we arrive at the climax of it in love. All right. So, in a big way, you can therefore see what this third part wants to convey. And so we take now this third part in a bit more detailed way. Just to elaborate it, though it will not change very much about what I have been saying just over the last quarter of an hour. So the very first subject is mind, where Mrs. Eddy shows that man originates in mind, whereas the material creation originates in erroneous thought. Actually, when we know something about the synonymous term, mind, and its counterfeit, we could already write quite a little story around this very fact, if we keep to the tonality. And I would like to bring out this because I would like to show you that actually in the divine mind that dictated the text of the textbook, there was just that point there, namely that man originates in mind. Man originates in mind. Just four words, just one tone, but you can build around it and take the conclusions of it and the implications of it, and that is usually the text. The text that then we have over a paragraph or two paragraphs is nothing else than to to talk around this central point. And we could talk around that central point also, because what Mrs. Eddy says is very easy. She would take up the false sense, well, did man not originate in an egg, as people say, that he originated somewhere in an egg? Isn't that the origin? See, that's the question she asked. Didn't Agassiz say so? Didn't Darwin somehow indicate that he originated not in mind but in apehood? Goes right back to the apes and to primary dust, like in fundamentally, because even the apes came finally from dust way back some billion years ago. So why should you say that mind is the origin of man? And therefore she goes right back to the Bible and says, well, according to the Bible, man springs solely from mind, so that actually man is mind's creation, therefore an idea of mind. He's not a mortal, he's not a material form, his ideas, because God's creation always are ideas, and life, it was the self-sustaining life of man. Again, life and mind. Yes, that's what she says here. You see, it's not so difficult. The moment we read a text and know first the overall tone, the overall subject of a whole paragraph or two or three paragraphs, then we can easily read around that central theme, because we know now quite a lot about mind and mind's creation. Then we know a lot about the counterfeit, that mortal mind does not create, that matter does not create, therefore an egg does not create, therefore apehood does not create. We know all about that, and we know that mind as a creator creates only in ideas, and that mind is really self-sustained and self-supported because it reflects life. And that's what Mrs. Eddy says here. Do you see that if we understand something about the true subject of a text, the true tonality of the text, and are not sidetracked by some kind of a side remark that she makes, then we can read the text in a very intelligent and fluent way. It's no more difficult. It becomes easier and easier.